This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Welcome back to the second guest show. Mike Dottiglia along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. We're live at the Silver Slipper Casino, beachside in Hancock County, Mississippi. Come on by and see us. We'll be here until 7:30 tonight. And we're on 105.3 FM. And right after second guest, it'll be Monday Night Football as the Baltimore Ravens play the L.A. Chargers. And if you want to listen to the Pelicans, it's on WWL, the Big 870, as we speak, as the Pelicans play the Indiana Pacers. It's time now for Triple Option. And while Bobby sets up, I'll go first. One of the things that we've seen here with LSU, and the receiving core has been sort of hot and cold, but one guy has stepped up, and that's Aaron Anderson. Man, for Edna Carr's star, goes to Alabama, decides after 1 year to transfer to LSU. Last year, he caught 12 passes for 59 yards, zero touchdowns. Year two, 52 catches, 778 yards. He's averaging 15 yards a catch, five touchdowns. Talk about a guy that has really ticked up his game. It is Aaron Anderson at wide receiver for the Tigers.
Yeah, no, he's taking advantage of that. And I'm going to go triple option and talk about money. Oh, Bob, why are you talking about money? No, money for the community and our city and what it means. And what I mean, you know, we got the Super Bowl and the economic impact and what the Super Bowl means coming to New Orleans. You know, we'll talk about, boy, how the traveling draft show. Look how the draft is not just being in New York, going all over, and how the NFL
will be in Green Bay
could sell that. No, it's unbelievable. We ain't never have the way the draft is because we have Draft Fest. Not Draft Fest. We have a Jazz Fest
Jazz
and all
Fest,
that. And so it's we don't have enough hotel room. Conflict of interest, whatever. But this caught my attention because I remember the very first combine, the NFL scouting combine, I was invited to, and then it was in Tampa Bay, Florida. It was not always in Indianapolis. It was in Tampa Bay, Florida, and I ended up signing with the Michigan Panthers because they were going to guarantee me some money. And so I said, why am I going to work out in the NFL? And, I mean, I had a wife and a kid to support at the time. But this one caught my attention. The state's tourism office announced this being Indiana, announced a deal that they're extending the partnership with the league that began, way back in. And previously, the deal, Mike, with the scouting combine, set to run through 2025 now, and the NFL combine has been a proud history of Indianapolis together, and they're thrilled to continue the longstanding partnership. And for instance, if you look at, you look at the Visitors Bureau and all that in Indianapolis and the local community, going through the 2026 event. And Peter O'Reilly, the executive vice president of Club Business of International League Events at the NFL, said, now it's a small amount, but it's still, what do you associate the combine? Indianapolis.
Right.
Central locality and all that. But the event guaranteed a record, right? $9.5 million in economic impact in 2024. Mike, it's basically they've attracted like 27,500 who attend the family-friendly combine experience. So you know how when you associate something, so we think of the players, and that, you know, the NFL is year-round, and when we think about the combine, the draft, and all that's going to come about, that Indianapolis is going to continue to have that. It looks like the deal right now for at least is going to, like, 2025, 26. So it'll be now. I think they can eventually bid that out.
I think it'll be bid out.
And have more competition for that. But
okay.
The central locale is good for that.
You came out in '83. I did 9 years television with John Forkey. John was in '82. John tells me, Mike, we had four combines. Him and Art Schmeister, they went to the four different combines across the country.
Because you used to have him at Bledsoe, United, all these different scouting departments. It wasn't just all one.
Yeah, right. So John was telling me, man, you'd go here, you'd work out for a group of teams in the Northeast. Then you were in Florida. Then you were in Texas. Then you were in California. And he said, man, him and Art Schleister, and, man, you know, Art ended up being a high first-round pick.
With the Colts, right?
Yeah, he had some issues.
We like to gamble a little bit, yeah. He needed to go to Gamblers Anonymous. I actually went to prison because you want to talk about having a gambling problem. He went to prison because of that.
Basketball game.
You don't bet on the NBA. He bet on the NBA. That he got in trouble with that, trying to chase his money.
But John told me, man, we were traveling. He said in the whole group, we'd all go sort of as one from one place to the next. And he said, then that was it. It cost the NFL way too much money to do that.
So why don't we combine this?
And so that's why they put it centralized in Tampa the following year when you went.
Yeah. So it's amazing how that's grown. But the NFL's year-round. When you look at it, how they always want your attention no matter what the month. What would be the weakest month for the NFL, is it July? It'd have to be maybe
July.
The last weekend in June and the 3 weeks in July, right?
Yep.
That'd be the only dry period when it seems like there's no NFL news.
Well, the good news is for Louisiana is they have Louisiana Line Camp, Manning Passing Academy, the Dr. David Elias' Pro Football Camp. Charlie, you're next.
Guys, I'm going, you know, we talked about this offseason, how the best running backs kind of flew off the board real quick when they moved from team to team. And so the Giants let Saquon leave, and we're seeing what he's doing in Philadelphia. The Titans let King Henry leave. We'll see what he's doing in Baltimore. And the Raiders let Josh Jacobs leave, going to the Packers. So Sam Block of ESPN put this out. Those three teams talking about, you know, obviously, once again, the Giants and then the Raiders and then the Titans are combined 7-26, and those three running backs right now are combined 24-9. So it's a complete swap. And you're looking at the top rushing leaders right now, guys, this season. Saquon Barkley, number one, 1,392 yards. Number two, Derrick Henry, right behind him, 1,185 yards. Number three, Josh Jacobs, 944 yards. I'd say those investments are kind of working out.
I agree with you, Charlie.
And the running back, to me, the moral of that story, the running back position is not dead. Everyone wants to see the forward. No, we want to see the forward pass and all that. But if you truly want to win, you want to keep NFL defenses off balance. So it just shows you right there, the proof's in the pudding. Can you run the ball?
Okay, who does this help out the most?
The quarterback.
Other than that, I'm talking about for the future. The guy, the Boise State running back, Jimmy.
Oh, yeah.
Just think of that. His agent can say, okay, look what these other teams gave
how
up.
How relevant the running back is.
And look how they won. Man, Ginty, he's going to have a lot of teams after him.
Because
he's clear-cut, the best halfback in college football.
And, you know, Charlie and Mike, you know, you got to have luck with injuries and all that. And I think this is his first game he played. Mike, he hardly played at Texas, the running back with the Panthers. What did he do, Charlie?
Jonathan Brooks.
Jonathan Brooks hasn't been good. I thought you were talking for a second there about Chuba Hubbard, who, you know, is up there at number five in rushing yards. But, yeah, Jonathan Brooks had a very quiet debut, but he's still coming back from a major injury. I think he'll be fine.
I did not think he would be on the football field at this time when he had the injury. That ACL is normally 11 full months and then maybe a little lead time. He came back much quicker than I think most people thought he would.
Right, because Carolina's counting on him to be like Bijan Robinson is for the Falcons.
So you got a 1-2 punch here with Chuba Hubbard.
Yes.
And with Brooks. Yeah. And, hey, little Bryce,
he played
really well yesterday.
Hey, little Bryce maybe turned that corner. He was hanging with it. He just shows you the parity in the NFL, though.
Absolutely. We'll be back with more Second Guess right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on the Second Guest Show, Mike Dettillo along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, live from the Silver Slipper Casino, beachside in Hancock County, Mississippi. We're going to go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. He is the host of the Jordy Collada podcast. Jordy Collada. Jordy, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Jordy, it's been a difficult 10 days for LSU football. When you look at it, losing to Florida, I know Florida beat Ole Miss, but to me, they're an average team in the SEC. and then lose Bryce Underwood on Thursday. You did get a little bit of a click up when you defeated Vanderbilt 24-17 Saturday night. And then today, Bruce Feldman comes out with his piece and kind of an expose of kind of the good and the bad and what's happened to Brian Kelly at LSU. This has been a difficult 10 days for the Tigers. Now, how you can cure it? You beat Oklahoma and you hit big on signing date, which is in early December.
Yeah, and you heard Brian Kelly really kind of talk about that today at his press conference of what could be coming with that transfer portal class, with what they're going to do on the open market this year. You know, I mean, I think they're going to be aggressive. It sounded like they had built up the war chest and just had some money opened up with the decommitment from Bryce Underwood. You know, I think they have some needs and really trying to find the best way to recruit the portal, and they have not found that yet, and I think they're going to change their strategy up, you know, as far as going in and being aggressive in this offseason. I think that, like I said, they have some money to play with and, you know, going after some high-end guys and making them some offers that are competitive, you know, to the bigger schools. And it really did sound like Kelly was talking about that at length today in his press conference. That's his, you know, really kind of in-depth as I've heard him go into recruiting strategy. And obviously last week it feels like everybody is, you know, the world is melting with what happened with Underwood. So Kelly had to come out and, you know, kind of give a state of the program, or at least just a little bit of a, you know, here's our plan. So, you know, it was interesting to hear how he's going to fill some of those voids and, you know, the ways that they're going to do it. And you know, the New York Times piece, I think, you know, the timing of it is, you know, just kind of piling on of what you talked about. It's been a rough couple of weeks here in Baton Rouge for Kelly, the football program. And, you know, that article is just kind of a cherry on top. But, you know, I agree with you. You know, I mean, they quieted a lot of people down last Saturday night. I think it was good to see that there was a big crowd there. There was a lot of people at that game. And, you know, you'll have an opportunity to see Oklahoma in Tiger Stadium for the first time ever. And, you know, close out on a positive note for LSU football. And I think that's the goal this week.
You know, Jordy, when you look at the leadership, you know, you have a players-only meeting or you get together. I thought what was significant, you know, a lot of times the quarterback it has to be the leader, natural leader. But just elaborate a little bit more on senior running back Josh Williams. I'm looking at what he was able to do. He had 90 yards on 14 carries, a season high in yardage. But you look at, he also had 151 total yards, two touchdowns on 18 touches. So I'll look at that. And, you know, you got to walk the talk. You know, you're in front of the team, you're trying to get them motivated. Well, you got to back it up on the film. And I think he was able to do that against Vanderbilt. And that goes a long way as far as, I'm just talking about player to player, whenever a player is able to do that, to walk the talk.
Well, and look, he was really kind of the center at the talking that week. I mean, he had called a couple of, you know, he was at the center of that players meeting. Kelly talked about how he was, you know, talking to the team after the game, and those being the expectations of the program, the football player, from Josh Williams' standpoint, what it should be for every player in that locker room. And, you know, I think Josh Williams is really, he's wearing number 18. He fits that mold and fits that description as well as anybody who's worn that number in a recent memory. Because of just that, you know, he really does hold it very dear and holds the standard very high to what it should be for LSU football. And, you know, I think you saw that on Saturday night, his two early scores. Obviously, he's always very, you know, he's a beast in pass protection and plays the game physical. That was a physical game on Saturday night. And I thought that Josh Williams, you know, like you said, Bob's, you know, he talked a lot of it last week, and then he got there on Saturday night and walked it. And, you know, as we know, as competitors, as you guys know, and Bobby, you've seen it at the highest level. I mean, that there's one way to fast track respect for a player, and that's going out there and handling your business on a Saturday night. Not that Williams is looking for any respect in the locker room, but, you know, after the week he had of, you know, trying to get everybody on the same page and trying to get everybody that to hold the rope and set the standard and or live up to the standard. You know, I think, you know, him to go out there and lead that performance goes a long way.
Now, Jordy, listen, the quarterbacks get too much of the glory, too much of the blame. I'm looking at Nussmeier, completed 76% of his passes, 28 of 37 with 332 yards. So you can look at, even though he got sacked, that was really Florida got after him. And that's why I was sacked only once against Vanderbilt. But I can tell you, if this continues against Oklahoma, he'll have a big-time game. And it's all about, can you keep defenses off balance? And the reason why I bring this up, LSU trying to run the ball, subpar performance, obviously, against the Aggies and A&M. But then they average 5.6 yards per carry against Alabama, 6.6 yards against Florida. And then you look, they're able to run the ball against Vanderbilt. So just like, oh, we got to throw it 50 times a game. A lot of times people don't realize that, that how important that is for a quarterback. And that you're able to have some sense of balance. And if they can run the ball, that'll definitely bode well for Nussmeier and the Tigers against the Oklahoma Sooners.
Yeah, and that was a physical game Saturday night, Bob. You know, I mean, that Vanderbilt team they wanted to come in and run it at LSU, and they were going to try and take away the run. It was good to see Will Campbell was named SEC Offensive Lineman of the Week. And, you know, a lot of praise for Nussmeier in the run game this past week from Brian Kelly post-game on Saturday night, and even kind of doubling down on it today at the press conference, talking about, you know, going back and watching the film, how impressive Nussmeier was of getting in and out of, you know, situations and checks and getting them into run, styles, plays, and even, you know, kind of throwing those outlets to Aaron Anderson and C.J. Daniels on the perimeter was, you know, kind of just tall sweeps, you know, I mean, just kind of playing the numbers and, you know, being able to run the ball. So, you know, I think Nussmeier is, somebody who obviously could have used the benefit of the run game at certain points this season, but, you know, has really been instrumental in it when the team has performed in that category. On Saturday night, they had it clicking, and a lot of it was because Nussmeier recognizing what was going on the defense and stepping in there and making the play and making the call.
Jordy, one of the things that we always try to preview the next game, and so Oklahoma's up next. As I was telling Bob, Jackson Arnold, he's a running quarterback. You know, he's just not a scrambler. Those type guys have given LSU a lot of issues in the past. Now, he is way erratic as a passer. He's all over the board. Some games he looks pretty good. In other games, he's absolutely lousy.
But even though they crushed Alabama, he only threw 11 times, but he was 9 of 11.
So he played pretty well there, but, man, it was the turnovers. They were able to run the football pretty well. Looking at this game against OU, my thing is, if I'm OU, I'm going to have Jackson Arnold be a big part of my rushing attack, because LSU has not shown they can stop that.
No, I think it would be mindless not to go into a game versus LSU with a running threat and quarterback. And not only that, look at what Oklahoma just did to Jalen Milroe. I mean, like, if they needed any more confirmation of how bad LSU was struggling against that style of player, you know, they had him in their place on Saturday night and just throttled him. You know, I mean, they turned him into a throwing quarterback, and, you know, I mean, he had no answer. And, you know, I think that's probably even going, you know, more over to the fact of what we're talking about. You know, they had a chance to see, you know, what looked like an LSU killer over the last 2 years really kind of be neutralized when they try to turn him into a throwing quarterback. And, you know, I think that is definitely going to be the plan for Oklahoma this week. I expect Blake Baker and the defensive staff to have a plan in place. But, you know, Mike, I expected that to happen against Alabama and Jalen Milroe. And some of the things that they were missing on was not scheme. You know, I mean, they were still out of position. They were still not in the right places. They still weren't responsible defensive football against a running style quarterback. So, you know, I would think that they would be prepared for Saturday and Arnold, because, you know, I, like you, would anticipate, especially with his inability to throw the ball, at least, you know, from a number standpoint, he was efficient last Saturday night. But you know, I mean, I think if you can turn him into, you know, a one-dimensional guy, like what they did to Milroe last week, then the advantage can flip real quick to the defensive side of the ball. And, you know, while it sounds easy, LSU has very much struggled in trying to get that done this season. So I expect that to be the plan for Oklahoma, of them coming in and trying to beat LSU with a running quarterback. And, you know, hopefully for LSU's sake, for the third time in the last 5 weeks, that doesn't happen. You know, what has happened with, you know, obviously Texas A&M and Marcell Reed and Jalen Milroe, and what the possibility is for Saturday.
You know, him to beat you with his arm, yeah, not with his legs.
And then, Jordy, right quick before we let you run, boy, you look at the SEC cannibalizing one another. I mean, boy, talk about a bad weekend for the SEC. What? I mean, look, A&M's Alabama. It was unbelievable. Ole Miss, and then so how many teams do you think they get in the postseason? Three or what? Well, that's what it seems like. Tennessee could be in a good position.
I will say this, Cannon. Anybody who was holding out hope for a nice league game is definitely going to lose that vote.
Go on.
Yeah, I think it's still four. I still think it's four.
Okay.
The TV contracts, you know, and I think Tennessee's the last game in, the last team in.
All right. Thanks, Jordy.
Thank you, Jordy. Appreciate it, buddy. That was Jordy Collada from Baton Rouge on the Jordy Collada podcast. Does a great job covering the LSU athletic scene. We'll be back, and we come back. Matty Hudak, sideline reporter for the Tulane Green Wave, will join us previewing Thursday's game as the Green Wave takes on Memphis. Back here on the second guest show, Mike Dettillo along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. We're at the Silver Slipper Casino, beachside right here in Hancock County, Mississippi. Let's go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. She's a sideline reporter for the Tulane Green Wave and also publisher and host of Before the Whistle podcast, Matty Hudak. Matty, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. I got one question. How many years have you been the sideline reporter for Tulane?
This is wrapping up my fourth season here on the sidelines.
Okay, three of the four, where you ended up at the end of the season?
With a spot in the conference championship here, Mike.
You're bringing them good luck, Matty. Three of the four.
It's all that good karma there, Matty. I mean,
we've got you another extension, maybe.
So that means a whole lot better. You on the sideline versus Gus Cattingill. So Gus didn't even win another. So you the magic formula, Matty.
Yeah, Gus got to go on to that.
I think Corey told me that my record as a sideline reporter is 34-16. So I'd like to think pretty good.
That's pretty good. Matty, we all know when you play Memphis, and I brought this up to Coach Summerall, man, the one thing they got is fast dudes. They are athletic.
They can't play defense, but they're going to score.
But, man, you're in a track meet every time you go up against Memphis because of the speed and athleticism of their skill players, running back, wide receiver, flex tight end, quarterback. That's a big challenge for a defense that has really played lights out the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, kind of looking at Memphis this year, I think that kind of parallels a lot to the 2023 Tulane team, where they had all the veteran leadership, they had a lot of guys returning, but it just didn't really seem to click as well on the field. But that doesn't take away from the massive skill that they have, that, you know, you look at a lot of the teams that Tulane's played in the AAC this year, and there's just been such a clear disparity in competition level. This, to me, isn't one of those times. And if you look at the last couple of games for Tulane, they went up against Charlotte. They benched one quarterback halfway through. The other guy couldn't really complete anything. Then they go over to Navy Temple is in the middle of that. Really hard to judge anything. They're missing their best skill player in Dante Wright. Then you go to Navy where, yeah, they shut down the run. They shut down an option team, but the explosive passing game wasn't really there because of Blake Horvath's injury and also their coverage. This, to me, is going to be, you know, a test where it's not just about them all doing their jobs. Assignment, talent, and skill is really going to matter against a veteran quarterback that, you know, pretty much leads the conference in most metrics, very similar to how Pratt did last year.
Matty, before we talk about the 12-team college football playoff probability for the Wave, I'm looking at Army. They got spanked by Notre Dame, 49-14 loss on Saturday night. It virtually guaranteed Tulane will play for the right to host Army in December the 6th, the American Athletic Conference Championship game. Now, when you look at you facing Memphis on Thanksgiving night at Yeoman Stadium, are like, I don't know, the student body, are they on campus? Because that's kind of weird come Thanksgiving night. And considering how relevant Tulane is, there's no reason that shouldn't be a packed house come Thursday night against Memphis. I mean, you should be standing room only. Is that going to be the case, you think, or what?
I really hope so. You know, it is a shame that it's not on Black Friday, because I do think so many students would be at this game and would really fill a lot of those seats. But everyone that has Thanksgiving, for me at least, I'm done eating by that time, and I'm looking to go on a walk and get out of the house and not just sit there and have all my food be in my stomach. So being able to go to a football game where, you know, I'm not going to get into the, oh, they're the best team in Louisiana right now, but they're playing really winning, dominating championship level for their conference football, and they're getting that deserved attention. As you said, we'll get to that 12-team playoff thing, but there's a reason that they're getting the attention that they did. You don't just go into a service academy like Navy and shut them out 35-0. That deserves a lot of respect, but ultimately it does all come down to this weekend's matchup, and I just hope that, you know, at least with respect to Tulane side of things as well, that the focus for them really remains on getting this last one done. But these seniors, you know, I talked to three of them today, Josh Remetich, Ethan Hudak, Eric Hicks. There are a ton of guys that are not just here for the last couple seasons. They stuck here through the 2-10 year. And so for them to really see out that whole turnaround, stick around for that, stick around for another coaching change, and really turn this into a player-led team that this is the earliest they ever clinched a conference championship. If there was ever a time to go see some great guys play football with a hell of a head coach that's a lot of fun, it would be this Thursday for tickets that are selling for $5.
Whoa, bank me a bucket this day and age. Yeah, take your kid. They don't know it's a football game. Let's go. Come on, you get excited. The crowd's going crazy. I think it could be a great atmosphere. And, Maddie, I guess I'm going to look ahead and not put the cart before the horse, but we can do that as long as, you know, the players and the coaches aren't doing that for the Wave. You know, take care of business come, you know, Thursday night against the Memphis Tigers. But looking at, you know, American Athletic Conference champion, and I'm just saying Tulane, in theory, no one would have maybe thought this. You could be ranked higher than a champion of maybe the Big 12. And look at the chaos you have right now in the Big 12. And, you know, they still have, what, 8 teams in contention for its title game entering the final weekend. But then you look at the college football playoff rules, it stipulates that, what, the top 5 conference automatic champions get automatic berths regardless of whether they're in Power 4 or Group of 5 leagues. Just explain that, because that's that was hurting my brain. Okay, well, what's going to happen with Tulane and all? Like, because I look, now we still got to see how this is going to play out. But Tulane got a fighting chance to be in that postseason.
They got more than a fighting chance, to be honest.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, the way that they moved up 5 spots, I can't think of the last time that I saw a jump like that for Tulane. I mean, they haven't been in the college football playoff rankings really for a long time ever. But to go up 5 spots for that win at Navy, that really showed to me that the respect level is there. And they, you know, they won the bye week, all things considered. I always go back to, you know, conversations with Nick Anderson in the Cotton Bowl year, and how it was always just a team of destiny, and how confident he was that everything was going to work out, that if they were meant to be there at the end, Navy would beat UCF. They end up, you know, pulling that off. They end up breaking a 32-game winning streak in Cincinnati. You know, they had to pull off so many of those things on their end, but all the chaos that basically needed to happen in order for us to be having this conversation, like you said, about the top-ranked conference champions, that all happened in Tulane's favor this weekend, where you see kind of where they make the jumps this upcoming week. Because, you know, Boise, as unconvincing as their recent wins have been, they're not going to get penalized because they're continuing to win. But the Big 12, they could end up in a scenario where a lot of those teams have 3 or 4 losses. ASU was ranked behind Tulane last week, and they tend to really not penalize teams on byes. You have to think that they pass Army as well, and with all the teams from 7 to 15 that lost in front of them, there's really an opportunity for them to move up there. And I think, well, they haven't played Notre Dame. You saw Notre Dame played Navy. Then you saw Tulane played Navy. If they go and play Army and shut them down the same way, in that same dominating fashion that Notre Dame did, to me, that's the best that you can say to weigh them against, you know, a Power 4 game that they're not able to have this late in the year. I think that really gives them serious credibility to, you know, making a run at this. You just think about the games in Kansas State and Oklahoma, and yes, they lost them at the end of the day. They still were, you know, within one questionable call from going to overtime against Kansas State. You have a redshirt freshman in his first road environment against an SEC school with a week that they had 1 to 2 days to prep because of the hurricane, and they still came back and made it a five-point contest after going down 21-0. So if I've ever been confident that a team like Tulane can compete with an SEC-sized school and the Power Five programs, they weren't able to at the end of this beginning of this year. What they are right now, I would not count them out of anything.
Maddie, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Really appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving to you and the family. And I told you last time, you know, we had you on, Steve Gelly, try to jinx you. Ethan, about the deep snapper. Man, you don't talk about the deep snapper because the only time you know about him is when he screws up.
Yeah, bad snap.
real quickly. The origin of him becoming a deep snapper, when did that start?
Ethan Hudak, actually, I had this conversation with him. He was kind of an odd body type. He's, you know, a little stocky for a long snapper. He wasn't really big enough to play guard or center, and so they said, you know, there was a guy that he knew that was a long snapper and said it's a great way to get on the field immediately and possibly get a college scholarship. He kind of looked at it like a business decision and just perfected that one skill. It's really paid off for him in the long run.
Maddie, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Good luck Thursday night when the Tulane Green Wave play Memphis.
Thank you so much. Can't wait for it.
All righty. Thank you, Maddie. Maddie Hudak, who's the sideline reporter for the Tulane Green Wave. We'll be back to finish up our, in the 6 o'clock hour here, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're finishing up here our 6 o'clock hour at the Silver Slipper Casino Beachside in Hancock County, Mississippi. Bob, we saw it when it came down. Daniel Jones has cleared waivers, so now he is free to negotiate with anybody in the NFL team-wise. And his agent has put it out that he would like to go to a contender. If it's Minnesota,
hello,
Baltimore Ravens,
hello,
even if he has to watch, that's where he wants to be.
Well, because you have Andrew, you're in there and you're playing on a team with a great supporting cast, and all of a sudden you're playing in the postseason. Maybe work a little magic. No, look at how Sam Darnold got benefited going with the 49ers.
Baker Mayfield went with the Rams.
Yes, because that could benefit you. That's why that's a smart move. Don't go to the Raiders. They're not any good.
We'll be back with more second guests right after this news break here on the Big 870 WWL.